the WAS Files, the ultimate Redskins podcast.
Welcome aboard. I'm your host, Sean Drotar, and with week four in the books, it's time to take a spin around the NFL and tackle the biggest stories with the coach, Brian Billick, joining us as he does every week to share his special insights regarding what happened last weekend and what's to come this weekend. And today in this week's Rapid Fire Overtime segment, the Monday morning quarterback himself, Peter King, will join us. But as always, we start with the big interview. So let's get to it.
The big interview.
Joining us now is Rich Chandler from CSN Mid-Atlantic and RealRedskins.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Rich_Tandler, CSN. Rich, Washington gets it done. I don't think they're going to strike up the band yet because the Cleveland Browns are in a pretty bad place. They're one of the teams, one of the winless teams in the league. But in the end, the win is the win, and now Washington finds themselves back in the thick of the NFC East race. When you looked at this game, when you see how they ended up winning it, a rather efficient day by Kirk Cousins, you don't necessarily want to see the pick or the three sacks. When you only have six incomplete passes and you have three touchdowns, generally things have gone pretty well.
Yeah, I would have to say so. And he got help, and you know, any quarterback, especially Kirk Cousins, it seems his best friend is a good running game. He got a good running game from Matt Jones that opened up play action passes some. And he, again, like you said, he had his moments kind of the second and third quarter, you know, jumped out to a 14-0 lead, been having red zone problems all year long. Had not yet thrown a touchdown pass to Jordan Reed all year. Boom, first two possessions, red zone, touchdown pass to Jordan Reed. So that got them started the way they wanted to. Second and third quarter, you started off first possession in the second quarter through an interception. That kind of set things into a funk for a while, but they recovered. The defense certainly helped them out with the three takeaways in the third and fourth quarters, and that got it done for them.
Matt Jones, of course, as you pointed out, terrific. These are the kind of games, now you're not going to get this all the time, but this is what Washington would love to see from Matt Jones. You know, an average of 5 yards per carry plus, 5.3 in this case, got the touchdown, got the 117 yards, and was still also effective as a weapon on the outside for the passes as well, catching another two of those. That seems to be able to help them a lot offensively while they're still getting the wide receiver situation set up. You know, we don't know what is going on with Josh Doxton. We don't know when he's going to be able to be impactful, even if it honestly is this season. So when you're Washington and you're trying to look at how to get everything right, maybe Kirk Cousins is starting to relax a little bit as opposed to think about that next contract. Now, when you're Washington, you have the Ravens. The Ravens are 3-1. They seem like they're a pretty good team, but they also don't seem invincible. Then the Eagles. So next two opponents, pretty good records here, obviously. You're talking about a combined 6-1. Do they have their swagger back? Is this a team that feels like, hey, we're the defending champs in this division. Now you guys are going to have to take it away from us again.
You know, I think they're confident, but I think that, that Jay Gruden has been very careful and the players have followed his lead. You know, that last year is last year. And yes, they're proud of what they accomplished. But really, you know, when you count the first round playoff loss, they were 9-8, which isn't, which isn't anything to really throw a parade over. So, you know, I think they like to think themselves as underdogs. I don't know. It seems like every time, including last year and going back, even when in Joe Gibbs' second tenure here, every time they make the playoffs is when they find themselves kind of down in the middle of the year. And, everybody's written them off. And they rally back and put on the win streak. Now, they'd rather avoid that. But the point is that I think they kind of feel comfortable in more the underdog mentality. Like, you know, we're going to Baltimore trying to beat the Ravens. The odds are stacked against us. Let's go in there and take care of business.
not everything was exactly the way they wanted it. It seemed like a bit of a work in progress game. That the truth of the matter is they had a tough time pushing the Browns off the field when it came to third down, and they allowed a lot of yards after contact. Tackling seemed to be a problem. Over 100 yards after first contact, that's pretty rough. How do they make sure that they don't have those kind of mistakes going forward? Is this a concentration thing, a coaching thing? How do they get that right?
Yeah, I tell you what, it's been a persistent thing. They haven't been one of the better tackling teams out there for the last few years. And I just think it's a matter of of continuing to work on it. But I think also on a lot of those plays you look at, you're looking at the play develop, and it's like one guy or he's gone. If the one guy misses the tackle, the guy's picking up 10 or 15 yards. So I think they also need to get to the ball better, get two or three guys. If you can't tackle one-on-one, well, you got to try to tackle three-on-one or four-on-one. And I think there are perhaps some, Jay Gruden said the other day, kind of hinted that some guys, aren't really are getting moved out too easily on double teams, really aren't taking blocks on well enough, really aren't being in the right position where they're supposed to be on runs. So, when they figure that out, when they get to where they're supposed to be, I think, even if the tackling is still a little bit shoddy, when you have two or three guys that have a shot at them, somebody's bound to bring them down. But yeah, I think that's been a problem for a while. I don't think it's necessarily going to turn around overnight, but I think they're hoping to gradually, as the season goes on, it gets a little better.
Well, the team itself may not have its mojo back completely, but it seems that Josh Norman has a pick, was more than happy to needle his old team, the Carolina Panthers, even though they weren't playing in that game, and point out why that they're, in his opinion, why they're finishing 1-3 at the moment, and they're in a heap of trouble. What kind of difference has he brought to the team, not only as a player? I think we know how impactful he can be as a player, but bringing that kind of confidence and bringing that kind of ability to a defense, because in the end, a guy like Josh Norman is a game changer.
Yeah, he is, no doubt. Like you said, the confidence, I think, is the big thing that he's trying to spread to the team. I tell you what, he admitted the other day that he really is working towards becoming a leader on that defense. He said he doesn't really know the guys. He feels that to be a real leader, he needs to know their wives' name and who their kids are and what they like to do and things like that. He said he's still in the process of learning how to do that. So I think you'll see as the season goes on and on, they'll start to take on a little bit more of his confidence, a little bit more of his attitude. But for right now, it's certainly rubbing off. The players are just, almost in awe of what he can do on the football field. And I think for right now, I think everybody's pretty happy with that and pretty happy with the money they spent on Norman in general.
In the off season, a little bit, they worked in the summer and they added the team moved offensive coordinator Sean McVay up in the booth, and they wanted to see how he would be able to like that. He preferred to be on the field. Well, the last two games, McVay's been back up in the booth, getting that sort of bird's eye view, and Washington scored 60 points. Is this something that, obviously they're going to stick with it, because let's face it, when football teams have something that works, they do not change it. But does this really change the way that they're calling things, or is it a bit of a coincidence? How much difference do you think that's really making?
Yeah, it just seemed like, all of a sudden the run-pass ratio, which was way out of whack in favor of the pass the first two games when he was down on the field, got to be, a more balanced attack, more closer to 50-50, a little bit in favor of the pass, but closer to the NFL average than they were before. So, that's interesting. And we're just going to have to see how it is things go along. I think the main reason he wanted to stay down there on the field was to be able to communicate with Kirk Cousins between periods. But I think that they figured out they could do that just as well over the, a telephone or a headset or however they needed to do it. They figured out how to get it done. And I think now, just sort of being stepping back from the emotion on the sideline and, the distractions that go on there, and just focusing on the next series. It's not so much the big difference, as Gruden explained it, is not so much when the Redskins have the ball, you know, then you're focused and you're looking and everything's about the same. It's in between series when the defense is on the field where you're looking forward to what you want to do next on offense. I think that's where it makes a big difference, where he's kind of away from the fray, can look at things, look at what's been working, look at what hasn't been working, and design the plays, his next play calls better.
Coming into this season, not a lot of people gave the NFC East a great deal of respect, and now look at this. Four games in, there isn't a team with a losing record in the bunch. So keep things focused here, and Rich Tandler will have you covered. He's at CSN Mid-Atlantic, RealRedskins.com, and you can follow him on Twitter at Rich_Tandler, CSN. Rich, this is going to be an interesting season, isn't it? And it's great to be able to check in with you. Thanks so much for your insight today.
Sure thing, anytime.
Thank you again. It's Rich Tandler again, CSN Mid-Atlantic. He's got all the news with the Redskins, and this, who knows? A couple weeks ago, people were concerned. Now they might be right back in the mix. We'll be back on the other side with Coach Brian Billick.
Around the league.
And now it's time for the coach, Brian Billick, who's brought to you by SeatGeek. Visit SeatGeek.com or download the SeatGeek app. Make sure you and your family are getting the best deal on sports and concert tickets every time with SeatGeek. Coach, when you use SeatGeek, what makes that so great?
Well, it's got too many things to cover in just one show. I mean, the great thing is the how broad-based in terms of the different ticket agencies that it brings together for you. You're going to get the best choice. You're going to see exactly where the seats are. You're going to get a rating on how good a deal this is. And most importantly, every transaction is guaranteed by SeatGeek.
Well, I know I use it. And if you use it as well, you can now today use the promo code Billick, and then you'll get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. So do what I do. Do what the coach does. Use SeatGeek. Make sure you get your family the best seats for concerts, sports, and everything else that you can go enjoy. Coach, this is another fascinating week in the NFL, as it always is. But I'll start with the most recent game, the Monday night game last night. We watched the Minnesota Vikings leap to still continue their run. They're now 4-0. There have been essentially a surprise for everybody, in as much as the pieces seem to keep falling off the car here and there, but the car keeps going at full speed. You know, what kind of job are they getting done up there in Minnesota? It's extremely impressive.
Yeah, it's spectacular, and it's because you can base it on defense. This is, for my money, maybe the best defense in the National Football League. They're built right, a dominant front seven, a secondary that doesn't give up big plays. That was the thing last night that jumped out to you, and you knew it was going to be a problem for the New York Giants. They had one big play, the big 67-yarder that they were able to hit, and that was it. You have to try to generate some big plays particularly when you're going to go on the road. And then Minnesota, although not overwhelmingly on offense, but were able to, you know, kind of keep the drives alive. They were 8 of 16 on third down, so they kind of kept the drives alive. They did not turn the ball over. Sam Bradford was excellent that way. And they got just enough out of the running game, which they stuck with 30-plus carries for over 100 yards, that the Giants just couldn't combat that on the road. That's going to be the formula that Minnesota will win with all year long.
Looking over at the NFC East now that the Giants lost that game, they are at 2-2. They started out well, and I think people thought that maybe this was going to all fit for them going over the season. Now they've lost to everybody else in the divisions on a winning streak. Philly, of course, still leads now with the bye week. They're still unbeaten at 3-0. But there isn't a team with a losing record. Now we're only four games in. But have we underestimated the NFC East, or has this been something of a beneficiary of the schedule?
Yeah, to a degree. We'll see when they start really taking each other on. We're going to find out about the Philadelphia Eagles, who right now look pretty darn good. I mean, when you look at what happened over the weekend, how impressive is Pittsburgh and what they did to Kansas City? Well, what does that tell us about Philadelphia, who beat them last week and held them to 3 points? How good are, by way of example as well, the Oakland Raiders, who we were kind of dismissive of the fact because they lost at home to Atlanta. They go on the road and beat an undefeated Baltimore team. How good does that tell us Atlanta is? So, you know, you can draw some comparisons. Philadelphia's for real. We're going to find out going forward just how much for real. And the Dallas Cowboys, again, the schedule has not been that taxing for them. But by the same token, you know, they've looked pretty darn good with that, with a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back, that they lead the league in third down conversions, and they've got the top runner in the National Football League. So, yeah, particularly with New York and Dallas, these teams are for real. Washington still seems to be trying to get its footing. Don't know about them, and we'll see. You know, obviously they have a chance to continue to get better as we move along here. But the division looks very, very good. But I don't know that there's any dominating teams in it. Outside, we'll see how good Philly is. But I don't know that there is any dominating team or division in the NFC right now.
Let's take a look over at those Steelers in the AFC. Now they got Le'Veon Bell back, and you could see what a difference that makes. Pittsburgh's offense essentially just rolled, and this is something that they can do. You saw Le'Veon Bell line up even as a wide receiver for more than a few snaps to make sure that they mix things up and were able to still use D'Angelo Williams, give the Chiefs a lot of different looks. When you look at the AFC now with Pittsburgh kind of being all together again, Pittsburgh, New England, Houston, all leading their divisions at 3-1, Denver at 4-0, which of these are contenders and which of these maybe still have a little bit of work to do to get that way?
Well, I think they're all contenders. Denver playing great defense and running the ball, and notwithstanding the quarterback position, but they both, Paxton Lynch looked very calm when he went in. Trevor Siemian obviously has played very solid. The Pittsburgh Steelers still remain to me, you know, this could be a truly dominant team. But here they're a week removed from losing 34-3 to the Philadelphia Eagles. So we still have some sorting out to do. We're only at the quarter mark. We'll know more at the halfway mark, obviously. And for the Steelers coming up, this week they're going to play the Jets. How real are the Jets? Another team that a couple weeks ago, me included, were saying, wow, this team is caliber team. Now they can't even get out of their way, having nine interceptions in the last two games. But we're going to find out about the Steelers because they're going to play the Jets. They have to go to Miami, and it's always tough going down into Miami to play. And then they're going to play the New England Patriots and the Baltimore Ravens. So we're going to know by the midway point just how real and consistent the Pittsburgh Steelers are. Was that 34-3 beat down by the Philadelphia Eagles the proverbial wake-up call? Or was it an indicator that maybe there are still some chinks in the armor?
Well, one of the teams that you mentioned also earlier that surprised, I think, a lot of folks, the Atlanta Falcons are 3-1. There is an impression that maybe they're doing it with smoke and mirrors to an extent. They lost that opening game to Tampa Bay when Jameis Winston just looked electric, and he hasn't looked the same since. But they're averaging almost 40 points a game. That's probably not sustainable. But given the shootouts they've been in, you wonder if that's almost what they're going to have to do to keep winning. So if you're the Atlanta Falcons, what do you do to keep everything rolling, knowing that you probably can't, barring something very strange, keep putting up 40 a game?
Yeah, well, the most impressive thing to me is the fact that the wins they've gotten on the road at Oakland and New Orleans. I know New Orleans isn't a great team, but still a tough place to play. And then a very physical Carolina Panther team. And to win the way they did with Matt Ryan having a record year, he's on pace to just blow away. 2012 was his best year. We had, you know, 4,700 yards, and I think it was 36 touchdowns, something like that. He's on pace to just blow that away. You're right. It's unrealistic to think they're going to stay at this pace. But with Devontae Freeman in the backfield, with Mohamed Sanu opposite the receiver, they're, and the offensive line playing very well, this is a very legitimate offensive group. Now, defensively, you know, they may have to score 40 points a game because defensively I think they still may struggle a little bit. Remember now, they did give up 33 points to Carolina and 32 points to New Orleans. That's Drew Brees and Cam Newton. I get that. But they also gave up 28 points to the Oakland Raiders and 31 points to Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I think they're still struggling defense. The key is, can they increase their pass rush ability a little bit, get a little bit better that way? But I think this is a team that certainly can be a factor.
The Patriots have Tom Brady back in action this week. They play the Browns, who are winless. This doesn't look like a real good matchup for the Browns, but it looks like a great place for Tom Brady to kickstart his 2016 campaign. Do you expect any sort of growing pains or any sort of wobbliness coming back, or is Brady and Belichick, is this a well-oiled enough machine that it's going to look like he never left?
Oh, no, yeah, more of the latter, although there may be some hiccups on the way. I look at this like a Broadway play. You know, what do? You take it out of town to get it up to snuff, and you bring it back to town into New York. Well, this is their off-Broadway, out-of-town debut, good place to go, play a Cleveland team. I don't know. I mean, the football gods just, I don't know what they have against the Cleveland Browns. You know, the tight losses they've had, and now they've got to take on the New England Patriots. Oh, by the way, Tom Brady coming back tough combination. Obviously, a good team for New England to open with on the road, kind of, you know, get the, you know, dust off the rust, so to speak. And I imagine it'll be a game plan that's heavy. Cleveland's near last in the league, or one of the worst teams in the league against the run, so I imagine we're going to see a lot of LeGarrette Blount, let Tom Brady get his feet underneath him. And so that when they come back, we'll see exactly after, because, you know, they got some interesting games after this, and they're obviously poised for it, most, not the least of which, they're going to play the Cincinnati Bengals. They got to play the Pittsburgh Steelers at Pittsburgh, and then they get to go back at those Buffalo Bills who they just lost to. So they're going to be challenged coming up, but I'm sure they're excited about it.
Well, we've been talking about the good thing teams have been doing, and there's a lot of those stories around the league, but one of the ones that stands out is a team that's not getting it done, and that is the Arizona Cardinals, now 1-3. Carson Palmer in the concussion protocol. They have a Thursday night football game coming up. On the surface, it doesn't look like there's that much wrong with the Cardinals, but something is obviously off kilter, Coach. What are you seeing?
Well, they're a little like the Carolina Panthers. I was talking all day yesterday on my shows for the NFL Network. People say, okay, what's wrong with the Carolina Panthers? And when you look at them, they're not far off. I mean, they're not running the ball quite as well as last year. They're not quite as good on third down. They're not quite as explosive. Defensively, they're not quite as dominant. They're good, but not quite what we saw last year. And you add all those up, and all of a sudden now, that means some losses. The Arizona Cardinals appear the same way. They just don't seem to be as good as they were last year. Still solid. But not good enough, obviously, to get a win. And now they've played a couple good teams here. The New England Patriots, obviously, Buffalo in a little bit of a role. The Rams, it's always a tough defensive struggle with the Rams. I'm not quite sure what's going to have to happen. The offensive line's going to have to step up. They're going to have to start getting down the field a little bit more with that gifted receiving core they have. And that front seven in particular, the defense needs to start showing up and doing the things that it did last year in terms of putting pressure on the quarterback and stuffing the running game.
He is the coach, Brian Billick, and you can use that same last name, Billick, on the SeatGeek app right now and get $20 back on your first purchase with the SeatGeek app. Coach, thank you so much for the insight. We'll catch you next week.
Sounds good.
Coming up next, we'll go into overtime with Peter King.
Overtime.
This week, we're delighted to be joined by Peter King, editor-in-chief of MMQB.com. That's Monday Morning Quarterback, the site that's become synonymous with the best and deepest NFL coverage anywhere. Peter's brought to us by SeatGeek, because it's football season. The NFL and college football are in full swing. Baseball's playoffs are upon us, so be sure to visit SeatGeek.com and download the SeatGeek app for all the best ticket deals. Remember, the NHL and NBA seasons are on the horizon, too, so make sure you and your family are getting the best deals for the most exciting sporting events every time with SeatGeek. How are you doing today, Peter?
Everything's going great. Thank you for hosting me today. This is going to be fun.
Our pleasure. Well, I'll go with a couple quick ones for you. We'll start right here. Odell Beckham Jr. suggested that he's being targeted by officials after his three-catch, 23-yard performance on Monday Night Football. Do the Zebras really let defenders have their way with him more than any other receiver?
No, but that was a marginal call against the Minnesota Vikings that Xavier Rhodes could have been flagged for hitting Beckham out of bounds. But my feeling is that once you start to get this paranoia that the league is against you, that the officials are against you, I think Odell Beckham needs to understand that every official in this league is judged on every call he makes. And if he goes over the line on Odell Beckham Jr. to either call something against him or to do something out of the ordinary against one player, A, he's not going to get any playoff assignments. B, he's not going to be in the league for very long. So I think most of that is a figment of Odell Beckham's imagination.
Well, let's stick with wide receivers. Josh Gordon will stay on the reserve suspended list after saying he would enter rehab. And that seems like the right thing for him. I don't think there's any question about that. And while there's no need for the Browns to move on immediately, is this relationship irrevocably damaged?
I think the Browns, especially the current iteration of the front office and coaching staff,
I had invested so much time and energy, and basically it's, you know, it's about the fourth major stumble that he's had, Josh Gordon has had. And my feeling is that at this point, you know, especially when you're trying to build a program, you are getting ready to have him come onto your team after being let back in football by the NFL after his year-long suspension. And you have to ask yourself, why are we in this business? Are we in this business to try to get somebody off the substances that have bedeviled him for most of his adult life? Or are we in here to win football games? Well, you know, I think most teams would say, maybe one, two, or three strikes, okay, we can take it from a great player, but no matter how great he is, at some point, we got to pull the plug. In my opinion, the Browns have reached that point. I don't know if they are going to, you know, get rid of him after he finishes this rehab, but in my opinion, they should.
Coming off their shocking shutout win over the Patriots, the Bills coach Rex Ryan said that he was, quote, BSing about having sources that tipped him off about Jacoby Brissett starting at quarterback. Now, with Rex, you know there's a lot of gamesmanship. Is this just fun, or does this maybe start to undermine the trust between the Bills, Ryan, and the media that covers him?
I mean, anybody who I read his transcript from the press conference where he claimed to know what was going on with the Patriots. There's no way he was going to know what goes on with the Patriots. There's no way he's going to know who's going to start for the Patriots. He says that almost in a comedic way, and it's just part of his shtick. I mean, maybe it's because I've known Ryan for a long time, and I've listened to him for a long time, but he's one of those coaches that about 85% of what he says, I think, just goes in one ear and out the other because a lot of it is so silly. I just don't think it matters. And I don't think that we ought to be taking seriously when he gets on the conference call and asks Julian Edelman, hey, Julian Waltatulski from the Buffalo News, are you playing quarterback this week? I mean, it's a shtick. It's fun. So I don't think it's to be taken very seriously.
Well, keeping in the taking maybe a little gamesmanship being taken seriously, Josh Norman really went after the Carolina Panthers after their loss this season, needling them, saying, quote, you get what you pay for. Now, obviously, they parted ways with him in the offseason in one of sort of the most bizarre and notable stories in the offseason. How badly did the Panthers realistically now regret that decision?
Well, I know Dave Gettleman quite well. He's general manager of the Panthers. And I can tell you pretty categorically that Dave Gettleman does not regret the decision. And in fact, you know, let's think about, I just looked this up yesterday. You know, let's think about the Carolina Panthers right now and what they've done so far this year. Their defense in the first three games of the year allowed 307, 302, and 211 net yards. And so that is not, it's not the defense's fault what's going on. Now, they got shredded by the Atlanta Falcons on Sunday. So everybody is going to say, clearly, their defense, the rush isn't there. They don't cover as well, blah, blah, blah. And in my opinion, I talked to Julio Jones after this game. I really think that a part of the problem was in the game plan, was in how they defended Julio Jones. Because in a lot of ways, they singled Julio Jones, his 77 or 75 yard touchdown, whatever it was. Ben Wickery didn't have any help until he was too far gone. So I just look at this and I say we can't really be prisoners of the moment. They had a really bad defensive game, but they just simply don't believe in paying a cornerback $15 million or $14 million, whatever it was. And so far, since Gettleman has gotten there, he's been proven right in his personnel acumen. We'll see how this pans out, but no, I don't think they're second-guessing themselves over it.
Last one, Peter. The first-round pick, Paxton Lynch, played well at quarterback in relief of the injured Trevor Siemian in Denver's easy win over Tampa. Broncos coach Gary Kubiak stated unequivocally that Siemian would remain the starter. Now, is that the right choice, or is it just the safe one?
It's the right choice. I think Gary Kubiak loved the intelligence and the decision-making of Trevor Siemian, and he's got a better arm than people give him credit for. So I think that Trevor Siemian not only has done nothing to lose this job, but he's really, in the last, whatever, six quarters that he played, he was a huge factor in helping his team win. So I think this absolutely is the right decision. You don't make a replacement at a position on the field unless you are trying to make your team better. Benching a healthy enough Trevor Siemian would be making this team worse.
Brought to you by SeatGeek. He's the one and only Peter King. Be sure to follow him on Twitter at @SI_PeterKing and visit MMQB.com for the most insightful NFL coverage on a daily basis. Thanks for your time, Peter.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's the final gun, and it's a wrap for now, but be sure to check all the archives posted at audioboom.com. Search for NFL Files. Check out all the podcasts for every team in the league, because we cover them all. My name is Sean Drotar, and you can follow me on Twitter at @SDrotar. That's S-D-R-O-T-A-R. We'll catch you next week.
This has been a Sports Show production. For more team-specific podcasts, visit sportsshow.com.